This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio, telling you that the annual River Run International Film Festival starts this week in Winston-Salem. And with more than 150 films being screened, it is one of the Southeast premier film festivals. During its 17 years, the festival has presented high-profile, critically acclaimed films like Mud, 500 Days of Summer, and The Notebook. The festival has also showcased an eclectic mix of documentaries, including 20 Feet from Stardom and Food, Inc. And this year's lineup looks awfully good as well, with screenings of the French film Reality and a documentary on the intersection of hip-hop and fashion called Fresh Dressed. And here to preview this year's films is the festival's executive director, Andrew Rogers. Hello, Andrew. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
150 films at this year's festival. How do you decide to make the cut? What's the process for deciding what gets in?
It's a long and complicated process. We have three primary full-time programmers. We're watching films throughout the year. We go to festivals around the world. We also get submissions in from anyone who wants to submit to us. So this year we had about 1,500 films that we looked at. And we evaluated them, looked at them and came up with our personal favorites. There's no, academic criteria. It's just what we like.
And the fact is, you do have feature films and documentaries, so it's an interesting. I mean, you show them all on this.
Yeah, we've got animation, documentary, short films, student work. We show, there's no genre that we don't show, really. We've got 165 films from 35 different countries this year.
How many, do you make any decisions going in on proportions? How many documentaries and how many features, et cetera?
We don't do precisely that, but we do have preset sections of the festival. For instance, we do have a narrative competition section, and we always try to have 10 films in that and 10 films in a corresponding documentary competition section. You know, we know that we want a couple of shorts programs for shorts and for narratives and for docs. So we know that there's certain sort of slots to fill, so to speak. But we do leave ourselves enough flexibility so that if we do get, an amazing crop of films that are one type or another, we have the ability to look at them and program them.
Well, the festival kicks off with screenings of the French film Reality, and I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about that and why it's the lead film this year.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a couple years now, where we open actually with two films. This year we're doing Reality and Fresh Dress as the two opening night films. Reality is this French film. It's also partially in English. It's just a very weird, subversive, funny, surreal comedy. It's by a director. We've featured his work at River Run previously. And he just likes tweaking things and playing with conventions. So it's basically a filmmaker who wants to make a film set within a film, set within a dream, set within a nightmare, set within a film. It's like a messed up inception. It's really fun.
Wow. How a Bill Becomes Law.
I think exactly.
It could be a little of that. When you choose these films again, do you know, you've been at it for 17 years, an eclectic mix of films. Do you know if people are coming from far away and what proportion of people are kind of local, just hanging out and other folks come to see the films?
Yeah, we do some surveying every year and we've been doing it for nearly a decade. What we do is we're obviously talking and engaging with our audiences throughout the festival. But when we do our surveying, it's pretty typical. We come back with about 70% of our audiences come from the Piedmont Triad, whether that's Greensboro or High Point or one of the other smaller communities or Winston. And then about, depending on the year, anywhere from 20 to 25% come from elsewhere in the state. And then 5 to 10% come from outside the state or even potentially outside the country. And we've seen those numbers stay fairly consistent over the years. I think it's a tribute to the fact that River Run is primarily a regional festival, but that we do have a national draw.
How have the numbers, in terms of attendance, how they changed over time?
Well, we've definitely grown. When I took over the festival in 2005, we were a four-day festival, and our budget was a third of what it is today. We've seen in that time nearly double-digit percentage growth every single year in attendance, budget growth, and all the metrics that you can measure for the festival. It's been really remarkable.
What's the relationship? We've seen a growth in film festivals. You've been at it for a long time. Other festivals a little younger, but the growth in the festival world itself. What's the relationship between the filmmaking industry and the festival world? How are they working together? Or are they?
Oh, they are for certain. I think there's two interesting points on that score. What we've seen in the mainstream Hollywood world and in the commercial theaters, in the multiplexes, so to speak, is that the studios and the theaters are having to come up with gimmicks to keep people coming. 3D was you know, it's an enjoyable experience at times, but it's also kind of a gimmick to charge more money and to get people in the door. We've seen for years declining attendance at multiplex theaters. You know, there's only so many Avengers movies that I think most of us can take. So that's lovely and great, but the numbers in multiplexes have decreased. At the same time, numbers in film festivals have blossomed. And to your point about how we work with filmmakers, we work very closely. Every single year we're showcasing, you know, 150 plus movies. All those individual independent filmmakers don't have another outlet for their work. We're one of those platforms around the country that's actively seeking and promoting their work. So we've seen a lot of boom in independent filmmaking as the tools have gotten cheaper in the last decade, and film festivals are the platform.
Electrocuting people in their seats like they did for the Tinglers. It really only works once.
Right. Smell-o-vision really can't
Odorama.
Be.
No, wait a
right,
minute. Odorama, yeah. You could bring that back anytime, I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
Well, another film you talked about, the French film Reality, is one of the kickoff films. The other one, Fresh Dressed, very interesting film. Tell us more about it.
Sure. This is a documentary we first saw at the Sundance Film Festival this past January. It's a documentary about the intersection of sort of urban fashion and hip-hop, streetwear. It starts in the, you know, the 70s and the early 80s, and it's about how many of the fashion and the music that we know in a couple different cultural segments really have intersected and grown and evolved over the years. It's an interesting look at something that a lot of people don't really have a lot of firsthand knowledge about.
Here's a clip from Fresh Dressed.
I believe urban luxury fashion started with Dapper Dan and people wanting to aspire to wear these luxury brands that were unattainable at the time. And he figured out a way to make it attainable. What Dan did was basically do what we did with music. You know, we sampled songs, looped them, and made it our own. He figured out a way to do it in clothing.
All right, there it is, a clip from Fresh Dressed, a documentary showing on the opening night of the River Run International Film Festival in Winston. That's just what we were talking about earlier, the relationship between festivals and the film industry, and here sort of how fashion and music kind of work together to create a much larger culture called hip-hop.
Absolutely, and I think that this film shows that both influence the other in a lot of ways. And the film's really interesting because it interviews a lot of really famous people in the music, sports, and fashion industry. So you get a real mix of perspectives on where the genesis of different ideas and where different movements came from. And what's really remarkable in this, as it does in fashion, a lot of the movement, a lot of the propelling forward of new fashion ideas and fashion sense came from the street. So, you know, music was reflecting what was happening on the street, and fashion designers were reflecting what they saw in the music and on the street. So it kind of fed off each other, and it's a really nice film to show you how those three really worked together to collaborate to make this exciting segment of our culture.
Tell us more about the film. Who is that we just heard, and who made the film, and how long has it been around?
Sasha is the Jenkins, I think, is the filmmaker, and the film was made. It's a very new film, just came out, as I said, this past January at Sundance. That's where it had its world premiere. The film is playing festivals now. It's scheduled for release, I believe, later this year. It's a really interesting film. I think that the way that they're going to distribute it is probably to use festivals like River Run leading up to its release. I don't know yet what their plans will be for a release, but I think that it'll be something that we'll hear certainly more about in the coming months.
One of the interesting things you're doing this year is spotlighting Black American cinema. Where'd that idea come from?
This is something we've talked about for quite some time, actually. Every year we do a spotlight program that's a curated focus on a particular person, style, type of film, genre. We've done the history of Mexican cinema, a spotlight on Ingmar Bergman, contemporary French masters, pre-digital science fiction. We like to come up with different, unique perspectives to curate around. And for a number of years, we've thought about maybe we ought to do something specifically related to African-American cinema, Black cinema in this country. And we've sort of talked about it. It's a very broad topic. It's kind of hard to drill down to come up with what's the focus there. There's a lot of academic ways to slice it, and there's a lot of sort of populist ways to do it. And we sort of struggled for a while to come up with how to do that. And in this past year, I think we've seen an awful lot of really important news events happen in our country that have prompted a lot of, again, urgently important discussions on racial identity, racial politics, racial justice. And, you know, we're not an advocacy organization, but we do feel that we can sort of curate a selection of films that perhaps opens up a broader dialogue. And so we've put together a 6-film retrospective that showcases work from African-American filmmakers from 1971, which is immediately post-civil rights, and right about the time that Black filmmakers were first even getting the opportunity to work in Hollywood, up to 1991, which is the year that John Singleton was nominated for Best Director Oscar for Boys in the Hood, and Julie Dash was given the opportunity to direct Daughters of the Dust, the very first African-American woman to be given the chance to direct a Hollywood feature. That's a 20-year evolution, which encompasses blaxploitation, Angry Young Men, a movement of filmmaking in Los Angeles. We've got comedies. We're showing Hollywood Shuffle by Robert Townsend, who will be coming to the festival. It's just an interesting evolution to see the voice of black film and filmmaking in this country. And I think that in some ways the evolution stalled in a lot of ways. In some ways it's leaping forward, but you know, I think this spotlight should hopefully prompt some good discussion.
Kind of a good moment to look in. Well, it also it sort of prompts another one of the ideas, and I think one of the good things about film festivals in that it is a grassroots way of exploring culture. And I wonder how many, you know, you talk to people who come to the festival, you have some sense of who goes and why. Do you know how many people go because they've heard a lot about the film and they want to see it, and others who are very curious about the topic or about filmmaking and want to learn something about these subjects? Do you know what blend of what's the ratio?
Sure. I think it's interesting. The way we approach the festival every year, you know, we know, we're aware. There are people who look at our slate of films and they say, oh, geez, there's that depressing topic and that obscure film. I've never heard of any of this. I'm not interested. We know that that segment of the audience, we have to sort of excite them with something they have heard of or something that's sort of exceptional or big. So we program the ice cream to get folks in the door to enjoy the meat and potatoes. We do try to pursue films that will have some known actors, some bigger films, bigger titles. Not just for that reason, we also try to hope that they're good movies as well. But we drive audiences to that and hope that while you're here, maybe you'll go check out that Romanian drama or you'll go see that documentary from Bulgaria or something.
Well, The Grim Sleeper is another film that will be there. Maybe you can tell us more about that documentary, right?
Yeah, Nick Broomfield's an interesting documentarian. When folks think of first-person documentaries, the first person they typically think of is Michael Moore, who always injects himself into his movies. Nick Broomfield's another one of those filmmakers who does it, but he has a real dry British wit. And, you know, he does it in a much less sensationalistic way. This film is really interesting. It premiered last fall, I think, at the Toronto Film Festival. And it's about an exploration of a community in South Central Los Angeles and the fact that there was actually a serial killer living and preying on black women for 30 years that the Los Angeles Police Department didn't even recognize. They didn't even see the trends that this man existed in their culture, partially because, kind of going back to what we were talking about, the spotlight, they didn't really see the increasing or the mounting deaths of black young women as anything to really be worried about. There were a lot of prostitutes and drug addicts, and so they sort of didn't think that this was something urgent, or they didn't notice the pattern. It wasn't at the top of mind. And when it finally did came to light, it was kind of an urgent social issue in the community because the women had been being preyed on for so long. This film is an exploration of how long, why it took so long, and behind-the-scenes look at the person who was eventually caught and captured and put behind bars, and the people around him, and an exploration of just how this situation could possibly have been led to happen.
And I don't think it's a spoiler alert to say that when they found this person, it was someone who had great credibility in the community.
Absolutely.
That was one of the surprising features in this.
Absolutely. He's somebody who everybody would say, oh, I can't believe he would do it. You know, the same thing we hear anytime somebody does something horrible, the neighbors stand up and say, what a great guy I thought he was.
Yeah. So. Well, you have a film that you directed that just screened at Full Frame in Durham. It's called Crooked Candy. Maybe you can tell us a little. It's an amazing concept. And this is the first I'd actually heard about the Kinder egg, but maybe you can tell us more about it.
Sure thing. Kinder Surprise chocolate eggs are hugely popular all around the world. They're a chocolate treat. They're chocolate wrapped in foil. They're hollow. White chocolate on the inside, dark milk chocolate on the outside. Inside, there's a yellow plastic yolk. You open the yolk and there's a little toy or game or figure inside. Again, they're hugely, hugely popular all around the world. They're manufactured. The company that owns Tic Tacs is the manufacturer of them in Italy. But as it happens, because of a quirk in our laws here in this country, the FDA has banned them. So in the United States, you're not allowed to have them, buy them, import them. If you get caught at the border, they'll confiscate them. You could face fines. It's a
choking hazard.
It's
right?
A choking hazard.
Because it's chocolate, but then there's this plastic yolk. Okay, but go ahead.
But it's an egg. It's the size of an egg. So I guess the theory is if you just let somebody eat it, they're going to swallow the plastic yolk and everything inside. So
this is about the smuggler.
This is about somebody who I found who lives in Winston-Salem, who, as it turns out, is a Kinder Egg smuggler. And he smuggles these eggs not for resale or to make a profit. He does it for his own enjoyment. He gives them out at dinner parties to friends and family, and he likes it. He grew up in Europe.
The first one is free, right?
Yeah, exactly. The next one costs. Exactly.
Well, let's hear from said Kinder Egg smuggler.
To me, the Kinder Egg represents a piece of my childhood, a piece of Europe that I don't easily have access to here. I distinctly remember the first toy that I got. It was a small bronze figure of a soldier. I don't know from what time period, what war, or what culture or side, but it was very craftily made. It was heavy, had a substantial feel to it. I knew it was important and impressive before I even opened the capsule.
Oh, he wishes he still had it, I'm guessing. A clip from my guest Andrew Rogers' short documentary, Crooked Candy, premiered last week at Durham's Full Frame Documentary Film Festival. Is it on the slate at River Run?
I decided not to show it at River Run. My first film, I just figured, people would look me a little askance if, hey, it's playing River Run too.
Yeah.
It's playing elsewhere, though.
So tell us about the prize. I want to hear more about these eggs, though. Mm-hmm. These prizes are gorgeous. I mean, they're amazing bits of craftsmanship. This is not Cracker Jacks.
No. And Cracker Jacks, by the way, folks will ask, well, how are those legal? Well, Cracker Jacks are a little packet inside a container with food. It's not tucked inside the kernels of corn. That's the distinction.
Uh-huh.
Lollipop is legal, but a king cake made in New Orleans is not, with a baby stuck inside. The eggs are really fascinating. Your point about the toys is part of what makes the appeal so great. Kinder has long been known for just this exceptionally intricate craftsmanship of the toys, putting them together. And what's also a lot of people talk about is how there's this tiny capsule and they cram so much into it. They use every ounce of space in there. So when you open it up, suddenly this little capsule, you have to build like a giant giraffe or, an airplane, or you've got a puzzle to put together. And the pieces and the parts that can come out of this are often really remarkable. And you look at it and you think, there's just no way that's possible.
And so he gets them in. Are they expensive?
No. When you can buy them in Canada or elsewhere in the world, you typically are only going to spend between $2 and $3 usually is about all they cost.
How'd you find out about them?
Well, the story on this is I was at dinner with the subject of my film and our both of our wives. And my wife is from Europe and same country as the gentleman in the film. And we were talking. He said, have you ever had a Kinder Egg? I've got dessert covered. So he brought them out. My wife said, of course, I've seen these all my childhood. And I've never seen one. And he started telling me the story about how his obsession has grown into this thing and how he's had this lifelong problem of not having access to Kinder Eggs, that when he was younger, he couldn't afford them. And now he's in this country, he can't get them. And so he told the story of being caught at the Canadian border. And I went to bed that night and I told my wife, I said, man, somebody ought to make a film about this. This is just fascinating. And I went to sleep, and in my sleep, which happens, I guess, to some strange people, I literally dreamed the film almost exactly as it ended up. I woke up in the morning, and the first thing is I turned to her and I said, I have to make the movie. I'm going to be the guy who makes this movie. So I did.
You did. It's a wonderful film, and it will not be at this year's River Run Festival, but it did screen at Full Frame. And Andrew, what a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Rogers, Executive Director of the River Run International Film Festival, kicks off Thursday, April 16th in Winston-Salem. You can find out more details at our website, stateofthings.org. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. There's more ahead, but first, the music from Winston-Salem's The Genuine.
Hold on. sin to tortured orphans, sell silver circles to careless slumbers the weight or the distance. When you're beside her, can leave you blinded, hold in touch, hold on, hold on, oh.
You're a part of me.